Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts.
Brandon Thurston from Wrestlenomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates, plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Pollock and Thurston. John Pollock, Brandon Thurston coming at you for the next hour or so as we dissect the entire pro wrestling landscape. We will figure out all of the solutions to the world's problems. All of that and more coming up on today's show. How are you, Brandon?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Your country, a lot more going on in your country than ours, I feel.
Yes, it's been an interesting time to have cable news on and things of that nature.
I get the sense from being an avid listener of one Brandon Thurston that you are trying very hard to have a comfortable distance from the political discourse. But in this last week, it's pulling at you. This industry that we cover is pulling you more and more towards discourse.
You know, I think our friend Richard Deitch was saying something about, you know, and I think Nikki Haley had a sports take on Twitter, currently known as X, and saying that, you know, I keep the sports out of politics. And I feel the same way now, having seen now all in one night, Linda McMahon speak at the Republican National Convention, Hulk Hogan speak at the Republican National Convention. Still remains to be seen who will appear. I let's have an open mind about who might appear at the Democratic National Convention. But you know, politics is supposed to be my escape from pro wrestling, and it's being intruded on.
It's polluting politics for you.
Yes.
This once clean bastion of entertainment being
I work
poisoned.
At pro wrestling data and reporting all day. And then I figure, you know, I can put on my CNN or Fox News and have an escape, but no.
Well, tonight it's not making it any easier for you because AEW being thrown a curveball for the past month.
That's
they
right.
have been promoting Blood and Guts, the latest incarnation of the That's five right. on five, their ode to War Games. Mm-hmm. And then on Tuesday afternoon, President Joseph Biden getting behind his X message and stating tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern time, I will address the nation from the Oval Office. So AEW will be contending with a pretty sizable audience that I'm sure will be tuning in to hear Joe Biden speak on camera for the first time since his withdrawal from the race coming up in November.
Yeah, I'm predicting a lower rating for this year's Blood and Guts Dynamite than in prior years. Even if this speech wasn't happening, I can't imagine that AEW is going to reach what they've done in prior years for this particular episode, where they've done over 900,000 viewers and over a 0.30 the last two times.
Yeah, Blood and Guts, for those that have a lengthier memory, will remember this was one of the first big episodes of Dynamite that was purged during the pandemic, because they were yes. building up to that big show at the Prudential Center, and it was going to be a pretty landmark edition of Dynamite. And this very early on in the beginning stages of the pandemic, when we thought, oh man, is this going to affect Blood and Guts in a few weeks? Well, folks, buckle up for this pandemic if you were going back to March of 2020. And they did not get to stage a Blood and Guts event until, as you see on the screen here, June of 2022.
I was just looking because I just made these charts. They actually did one in May of 2021 at Daly's Place.
Oh, they did the Daly's Place one. That was with the Jericho fall. Yes, you're right. So they did have that one. But in front of fans, we have two examples here.
Yeah.
Of
I'm sure they had fans to some degree. But as far as back in traditional touring, yeah, it was the Detroit show.
We don't refer to those Daily Show episodes as real fans. We just figure them as people that are just have absolutely no concern about anything at that hour where we have to be going to live wrestling in 2021. But yes, the third incarnation coming up tonight, fourth incarnation if we include Daly's Place. And we will see. It will be the second week in a row that AEW presents a pretty lengthy match, but unlike last week, fans know going into this that you're getting a 45, 50 minute presentation of Blood and Guts. And I would think that they, like, do you at all react to the fact that there is going to be this massive news event going on right at 8 p.m. Eastern time? Do you think that is any part of the calculus of where you stage this event, or do you feel it was always going to be taking up that second hour into the overrun?
I would have to look at what they've done. I think they have finished the show with it in prior years. I'll look at the quarter hours while we're talking, but I would think if you want to get, I don't think it's going to have that big of an impact, really. I mean, these major political events, if it's January 6th, that's one thing. But I think Joe Biden giving a speech where he's just going to say whatever he's going to say. It's not this huge event that's going to change anything. I don't think it's going to have a huge impact. I think it'll have a marginal impact on the rating, but not that much.
Yeah. It's, you know, we saw on like January the 6th that back in 2021, which of course everyone knows January 6th, Eric Trump's birthday. And yes, did have an impact that night, that being a Wednesday night on Dynamite. However, as we talked about last week, the collision number recently, just hours after the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. And
yeah, they did put it in the latter half of Dynamite, the last two Blood and Gutses.
Right.
Second hour.
But if we're looking at that recent collision, I mean, that was not an example of like a massive news event, really, at least affecting the Saturday number. So we will see what tonight does, and as well what the continued degree of promotion on, like, Tony Khan has been staging a big event weekly for Dynamite, and we don't know what is going to be coming up in the next couple of weeks, but we are getting closer to All In and what they have to come back with the following week, because I think you're going to be seeing a lot of these kind of big television events during this time where AEW is in the midst of its television negotiations, and multiple reports that Tony Khan will be off to Paris, France for the Olympics.
Yes. Perhaps meeting with, who's going to meet with? Emmanuel Macron?
Ariel Helwani.
Ariel Helwani? Is he going in there?
He is representing the CBC up here in Canada over there as a correspondent. So maybe they will get their rematch. We'll get a follow-up sit down.
What's he covering? This is no MMA. Is he covering like the judo or something?
He's covering like just regular sports and stuff like that. So it's a pretty big platform for him.
Yeah.
He's also, he's got a pending free agency coming up, I believe. So it'll be interesting to see what his landing spot is in the world of MMA, boxing, abroad.
Pro wrestling. Who's his agent now? It's not Nick Khan anymore.
It is not Nick Khan. I don't know who's representing him. He might be representing himself for all I know.
Yes. Are you representing him?
I am
not. Are you floating it out there that when's this exclusive negotiating window end?
That's a good question. That's a good question. I don't think there is any deal in principle though with Ariel Helwani. Okay. I think that, I don't know what his exclusivity is or his representation, but, we will find out. He's in France. I mean, maybe that's where you go to finalize deals.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of networking opportunities there.
I didn't realize until I listened to this interview today with Mark Lazarus on our good pal, Matt Pelleny show, he casually mentioned the fact that USA Network, it's going to be all day coverage. And I looked at their schedule. Yeah, it is literally for the next 2 weeks, 24/7 Olympics on the USA Network. Like, there is nothing else that they are dedicating their schedule to. They have handed over their cable schedule to the Paris Olympics that start on Friday. So thus NXT and Raw moving to Sci-Fi for 2 weeks. And I also learned that instead of calling the taped programming of events that they'll re-air in primetime, that's not taped programming. It is re-energized and revitalized.
Really? It's like the game of the night or something. I forget what they're calling it. Yeah, I read Richard Deitch's article in the Times or the Athletic. Which should we touch on what's been reported about AEW's TV deal?
Please, I toyed
with the idea of banning this topic until there's really a finalized announcement.
Well, let's, as a precursor to that, as we can get into the AEW stuff, it is worth noting for those that maybe are not following the minute by minute of this NBA deal of what is going on. The latest is that Warner Brothers Discovery last week, they received the formal agreements that the NBA has in place for its next round of television deals. WBD had 5 days to officially match any of the offers. They have done so as of Monday night, putting out a statement, and it is believed they are trying to match the Amazon deal, which would be for about $1.8 billion per year. And now we wait to see what the NBA's response is. Is this going to end in a court battle between WBD and the NBA? And if there is a prolonged battle between these two, are there going to be any deals such as the AEW ones that are on ice until this conflict is they reach a conclusion?
Yeah, it seems unlikely that WBD is going to be able to truly match. I'm sure they submitted something, but I would think, I know, according to Bill Simmons on Matt Bellany's podcast, the deal that Amazon has agreed to with the NBA is upfront money, which WBD is probably too in debt to equal. And it's an all streaming deal, which with Amazon Prime Video's reach, which it's in who knows how many homes they're, you know, claiming or justifying that Prime Video is in, given the wide coverage that they have with those memberships, because I think the majority of American homes have Prime because if nothing else, the shipping, their streaming reach is greater than anything that WBD could provide in the form of the Max streaming service. So regardless of what Max may be able to provide, it's not going to be equal to what Prime Video is, unless they're going to make some argument about TNT and TBS being able to, or TNT, I guess in that case, being able to equal what Prime Video is offering if they combine TNT with Max. But in any case, there's still that issue of the upfront money that just financially, I doubt WBD could match that. I imagine there's greater strategy here involved, and they probably what they really want or are hoping for is a realistic outcome here as a fourth package, which has its own complications. But who knows? Will we know by the end of the week whether any of this is happening or not?
Like, certainly, if you have heard from, you know, it just sounds like from, you know, even from a Mark Lazarus listen to this interview or other people at ESPN, it just everyone's, and even the NBA, as they were kind of conveying during the NBA finals, like they want this to be finalized. And I think they want to have a clear path towards promoting where they will be going next year. And I think David Zaslav is preventing that. And I think David Zaslav is in this position where I think they honestly believe that they would be able to have the upper hand here and that their offer would be sufficient. And I think that they were somewhat caught off guard by the amount that was being thrown at the NBA for these various packages. And is a lot of this just for cover of stating, listen, we did everything we could to keep the NBA because that's going to be a massive loss. This is going to be on David Zaslav's record of the executive that did lose the NBA, which 5 years from now, he might look like a genius, or it could be looked at as that was the downfall of TNT. So to answer your question, I think the NBA wants to move as quickly as possible. And the idea of a lengthy legal battle, I don't think that serves either side at this point, but that could be where this heads.
Yeah. And you know, there is a report from SC Scoops that there is a deal in principle. I don't know. I've tried to find out what's really happening, and I don't know. It could be the case. You know, I tend to believe that, you know, that this deal with WBD, I imagine that AEW is going to continue to have a relationship with WBD in the next cycle, but I'm sure that that there's going to be other discussions with other networks, if there are any that are interested. And we'll see what happens. And as always, the thing that's going to have the greatest bearing on the deal that AEW is going to get in terms of its values is going to be, are there other bidders, and how aggressively are those other bidders willing to bid for AEW rights? I think Fox and Amazon are the only ones I could really see as being real bidders here, strong ones with strong enough reach that it's worth AEW's while to consider some of that content as the home for over any of the WBD homes. Is it going to happen though? I have no sense. Does anybody know? Are we in the exclusive negotiating window? I would say probably by this point. We are out of, I should say, the exclusive negotiating window at the point at which AEW could negotiate with other networks, would be my strong guess. We could ask Tony Khan. Someone could ask Tony Khan tomorrow on the conference call for the Ring of Honor show that's coming up.
There is a Ring of Honor show coming up. There is, if you want to look at the AEW / ROH schedule that is coming up beyond tonight's Blood and Guts presentation, Friday has your hour of Rampage, which is going head-to-head with the ROH pay-per-view that will be however many hours.
That's it turns out Honor. To be.
This is Honor Club exclusive, so it's not even they're not even restrained by pay-per-view windows. And then Saturday night, they're coming back with three more hours because it is Collision tacked on with Battle of the Belts. I'll say 11 that we are up to now.
11, I think, is correct, yeah.
And that's a lot of hours for AEW / ROH this coming weekend. Tonnage.
Yes, it is.
As Brandon likes to always refer to it as.
That's what you need is tonnage. It don't worry about wearing out your fans. It'll all be worth it in the end because you'll be able to say we provide X number of hours. We provide hundreds of hours of content year round. And maybe that makes a better media deal for you in the end.
To put a bow on this topic, we did just grab a clip here. This is Michael Nathanson, who is a very well-respected analyst when it comes to this area of television business. He was on with our good friend Richard Deitch, who I just ran into recently at the WWE Media Day here in Toronto. Here is a quick clip, and this kind of outlines what WBD / TNT are grappling with when it comes to the NBA.
Challenge here is I think the company feels that their negotiating hand versus distributors, ex-NBA, is still quite good. They have a ton of viewing share across the cable marketplace. They own women with the Scripps content, some Discovery Network content. They own news at CNN. They have a ton of other sports. Like, their theory inside the company is like, we're not as screwed as you think. But in media, as you know, the proof is in negotiations, right? So when they go up the next year or two and have to renegotiate their contracts for carriage from the cable and satellite operators, time will tell whether or not they get rolled back. And when they get rolled back more than the price of the NBA, we don't know, but we think the risks are high just because of the rate card that Turner had was so much higher than it would have been if it was the USA Network, right? So I think Wall Street looks at this and says, look, this is a lose-lose because even though they're going to have money to spend on new content, the NBA drove their rate card high enough that if they don't have it, they're going to lose more than they save on programming costs, right? Will the UFC come onto their platform? Will that change it? I don't know. I don't have a conclusive answer for you what happens next, but I do think they're more wounded than we probably thought they would be. You know, we thought they would retain the NBA but pay up for it. You know, the package they had, we didn't think they would lose it and now try to get in a fight about a streaming-only package.
A lose-lose, as Michael Nathanson characterizes it. But that's what it boils down to is there's immense savings by taking the NBA out of your budget, but in time, how is that going to impact their carriage fees? Because the NBA is such a golden property and has been for 35 plus years.
Yeah. And their ad revenue for that matter, I would think. And I think that just the uncertainty around what they're going to get from the NBA or if they're going to get anything and what they have to do in the alternative to recover the carriage fees value, I think sort of throws any prediction about what AEW is going to get from them into uncertainty. It could be good, could be really good still if they have another bidder out there that really drives the price up. Or maybe WBD just decides to do something completely different in terms of the sports that they go after and that they don't have that much money to bid for with AEW. So I think it's just a lot of uncertainty.
Are you working on a vibes piece for WrestleComics?
No, there'll be no vibes report.
No, unfortunately. To be determined, everyone. That's your breaking news on the AEW television front.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Massive story earlier this week. I just want to read the headline from one of the top publications out there in the wrestling space. Nick Khan's stock transaction today is routine. We'll cover tax expense.
Yes.
Wait, he's selling stock. He's jumping off the ship. It's done. This mirage of Nick Khan living happily ever after in WWE. It's done. Everything is normal. What was it? I got not one, but two notices from TKO this week when they flooded my inbox.
Second one. Very suspicious. Suspicious.
I can't tell you, by the way, just a sidetrack. Since I traced this to starting this show with you and the amount of things I have ended up finding I have signed up for, my emails are just, it's just nonstop. These people with all their newsletters and all their updates and stuff. It is just, it is definitely correlated with, keeping up with you, Brandon.
Well, I have a lot of email filters also so I don't get notifications all the time. I have some, I was thinking today, actually, it's just an array of email alerts that I have created for myself, both in a conventional sense, sign up for this such and such. And there's a lot of coding alerts that I'm involved in too. You should be grateful that I haven't subjected you to them yet, because I could. But yes, there was a stock sale. I'm going to go so far as to call it a sale. It is a sale. It was stock being liquidated by Nick Khan to cover tax expense. There was one transaction that was disclosed yesterday to the tune of almost $2.4 million. And then there was another one today, which we'll show on the screen here, for about $2.5 million. Now, this is to cover tax expense. And if you look at it, says so right on the form. It says sale includes an amount necessary to cover a tax obligation resulting from the settlement of a vested equity award distribution. Now, people want to speculate. Does this mean that the indictment is coming soon against Vince McMahon? This is a federal investigation that is reportedly happening. Does it mean that Nick Khan is liquidating his stock to run duck for cover out of WWE? No, not because of this. I don't think so. In fact, if you're an astute reader of Securities and Exchange Commission filings like I am, we all know that every single July since 2003, every single year, there's never been a year where this hasn't happened, because I checked. There are filings like this that come out from the named executives, the executives who meet the bar to have to disclose. We get these filings that says, okay, so-and-so has sold this amount of stock to cover taxes. So this happens all the time. This happens every year. I think this is a WWE specific thing, because we're not seeing this for Ari Emanuel and Mark Shapiro or TKO specific executives, and the Endeavor crowd. But we do see it for Nick Khan, because he is a former, he is a current WWE executive. So seems like it's a WWE specific thing that they arranged, but that's what's happening. And I don't see it as meaningful.
Do you expect a Nick Khan premium live event interview with an outlet next week?
We got to get our request in still.
We've been slow on that.
Could be. I wouldn't bet on it though.
Next Wednesday, 3:30 PM Eastern time. We could work it in.
Yes, we can.
I'll move some things around.
It'd be just in time. We could, discuss the TKO earnings call that had just happened.
Is that next week or in 2 weeks?
We're doing next week's show on Thursday.
Is next week the earnings call, or is it the following week?
All right. It's 2 weeks from now.
It is in 2 weeks. Yes. That week of the earnings call. We will do the show on a Thursday, because they're doing an 8 a.m. call on Thursday morning. No complaints from me. I like the 8 a.m. call, much preferred rather than the end of day call that they seem to have gone into. That has been the most underreported story, the fluctuation of these earnings calls and when they stage them.
Yes. Although
less and less, I feel we get a whole lot out of these earnings calls. Like, I feel like we almost need there was a time that these earnings calls, I mean, that's going to cover the hour. And they're very mum on
it's just the bigger company you are now, it's half of a publicly traded company. And the bigger company you are now, the harder it is for there to be like interesting material information, because now it's just at a bigger scale. And WWE is a smaller part. It's half, but it's a smaller part than being the whole that it was before September 2023, before this merger happened.
But we will get Mark Shapiro. So that, yes. Selfishly, I always look forward to.
Yeah. I doubt we're going to see Ari Emanuel again. This is the Mark Shapiro show. It has emerged.
Raw on Monday night. They had a bit of a bounce back after going against the Home Run Derby last week. They did 1,793,000 viewers and a 0.58 in the 18 to 49 demographic. So, back up from last week, this was a 3-week high for them, led by the CM Punk Drew McIntyre segment, which kicked off the second hour. The announcement that CM Punk was cleared, he will have his match with Drew McIntyre at SummerSlam, back in the same city where he fought Mickey Gall, where he walked out of WWE back in 2014. So that was the high point.
That is the high quarter for
the
show.
Yep. I mean, and consistent with Punk's performances and with Drew as well. So that continues to be, area of growth for them when Punk shows up. So, and he's on next week's show with Drew and Rollins in a non-wrestling segment as well.
Yeah. You know what else is a big hit on Raw? Really popping the numbers here. Is the Dirty Dom and Liv Morgan storyline. It sure has nothing to do with the thumbnails, but yeah.
How is it performing on YouTube in relation to others?
It was the most watched clip from Raw this week on YouTube on WWE's official channel.
Okay. Well, that's the digital audience is speaking, and I think our guests can also speak to the WWE's digital audience. Joining us, a long time coming. You know this man from his years working in WWE. He was the co-host of The Bump, as well as many of the digital properties. Now on his own, he has launched his own channel, The Wrestling Matt, that I'm sure we will be getting into. Matt Camp is here on Pollock and Thurston. Matt, it is great to have you on board. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for your patience for waiting for me for a couple weeks. I appreciate you guys. It's nice to talk to people who are level-headed in this wrestling world. There's not a lot of us out there, I feel like. I appreciate the work that you guys put out there, because most of the time it's just clickbait stuff and old people yelling about wrestling that they don't even watch anymore. So I couldn't wait to come on with you guys today.
Well, we appreciate that very much. And I mean, first of all, for you, and we will go back to kind of the WWE tenure, but for several months now doing your own content, has there been a surprise at you at what the response has been like? And now that you are covering a more wider variety and getting that instant feedback from the audience as it might compare to your time when you were doing The Bump, for instance?
It's completely different. I mean, you know, I always tell people I was part of the show. You know, I'm a broadcaster. I'm a broadcast journalist, the old Bobby Heenan term, but my paychecks all came from the same places as the wrestlers. So my idea always, Bump, Raw Talk, SmackDown, Lowdown, I wanted to get the people I was talking to over, get the stories over, send people to the pay-per-view, send people to Raw, SmackDown. You know, hey, I don't know a lot about this person. Let's find that gray area and talk about that a little bit so their personalities get over a little bit more. And I've always been a wrestling fan. I always wanted that to come across when I was doing stuff. I was not a typical WWE hire. And they let me go with that. I was the wrestling nerd. I was the wrestling historian, and they leaned into that and they appreciated that. And I certainly learned along the way. Okay. This is what we're trying to get over. It might not be my cup of tea, but I used to listen and watch differently. You know, you guys were just talking about Dom and Liv, and admittedly, not something that's really grabbing me, but it's not for me. And I understand that. I'm almost 40 years old, but I remember when Dom first came up and I was here, and man, he's doing so well. This is babyface, Rey Mysterio's son. Man, he's doing great. He clicks well for us. Mandy and Otis, man, that was great for. That's what they're going to lean into. So I get that. But now I cover it, and I cover it coming out of that world for 5 years. I cover it with 30 plus years of being a wrestling fan, and I try to look at it from what does the audience want? What are they getting out of it? And the response to me, guys, this was not the plan. This was not the plan when it happened to me in February, and I didn't know where I would end up. And a couple people reached out to me and were like, hey, you want to try this out? We think you can make something of this and be a wrestling voice in that way. And I jumped on it, and you know, it's, I've learned a lot along the way. I've taken things I've learned from WWE about building this and my work with the social media team and people you guys don't even know about or names you don't know about. And I've tried to implement that, but it's been very fun to take all of the things of my wrestling career and now talk about them and being able to talk a lot more freely. I am always a constructive criticism person, and I will always give credit where it's due. I praise WWE a lot, even though they let me go a few months ago. I have criticized them a lot, and you know what the comments will be. Ah, he's a shill, or oh, he hates the place he used to work for. And the same thing with AEW in any place. I love covering it. I love what you guys do. I love the business of wrestling, and I loved analyzing that stuff. So the feedback has been really cool and fun. It's been humbling at times. Other times it's, you know, I kind of knew I was very under the radar and I wasn't one of the big talents there. I didn't expect to be that, but it's nice to see people kind of follow you on your journey.
As you go back and can kind of take us into the discussion process with the bump and how it was initially pitched to you, because it starts at such a pivotal time as we're seeing NXT move to USA, AEW is about to launch, and the early vignettes, it was sort of like, what is this show going to be? That's how it was presented to the audience.
Which is exactly what they wanted. And that's what we were told as well. You mentioned it. We launched as the same day as Dynamite. That show launched on the exact same day. And it was that NXT tried to get that week jump on them. And then the day that Bump launched, everything got like, as soon as we finished, we jumped on like an airport van right to Orlando to do a watch long to make that bigger to kind of put the show over. But the show was pitched to me, not with that name, but it was pitched to me by the second or third interview I did to join the company by a guy named Brian Pelagato, who's no longer with the company, who was at the top of digital or pretty close to the top. He was technically the person who hired me. And he told me, he said, listen, we have this idea. We want to do a talk show. There was no talk of the cast or who would host it or anything like that. And I will tell you that changed a couple times before it even got started. That was supposed to be a Kathy Kelly vehicle. She decided to go to L.A. She ended up on SmackDown, wanted to do an NXT still, and Kayla got it. And honestly, it worked out better that way. Kayla and I meshed very quickly. I loved working with her, still one of my better friends. But it was pitched to me as, we want to have a talk show. We want it to be a little different. We want it to be younger. That's what they want. I can tell you TV was really never a big backer of the show. Behind the scenes, it was called The Dump at times. If you guys know, it was very rarely mentioned on Raw or SmackDown. It didn't get that love. The stuff that happened on that show, I don't think TV, an earlier regime, the KD regime, liked how it was shot. I don't think they liked how loose it was. And it never got that love, but it was pitched as, we want to talk about what's going on in the company and talk about it and not control the narrative, but just, hey, we have a talk show to talk about things, you know? And I always was like, oh, this is Todd. This is Mania. This is Livewire. This is the next coming of that. This is Bite This, but with more people, with a younger demo, if you will. And on that initial call, I was told, you know, if it goes well, maybe we do talk about AEW. Maybe we do talk about other things. That obviously never happened, but that was the initial pitch. And I know that this was not supposed to have like six people on it like it did when it first started. And that obviously got honed down, but they looked at people along the way and saw the ways they could fit people in. But I was basically told, without it being said, Kayla's the host. You're kind of the second host. You have that experience in broadcasting, because I was coming off of and still working for Bleacher Report and doing stuff out in Vegas and fantasy football stuff. And I had done Busted Open and I had done House of Hardcore and, you know, had a decade worth of broadcasting experience. So I was kind of the second. I was kind of pitched to, you know, you'll be the anchor of this. And the idea behind the show also was, this is a way to make new broadcasting stars. Did that happen? That's up for everybody else to debate, because some people left the show or were fired or whatever. But it did, you know. I'll give you a story that Vince once went up to Kayla after a few months and was like, I want Bump Kayla. She has personality. At the time, it was very much, and my guess at this time is this person, you know, stand there looking out into the void. And that's what she did. That was her job. And then she got to be on the show and we'd have fun with it. And Vince, the little times he saw the show, liked that. And I do believe, and Kay will tell you the same thing, it was a big reason why they started doing the stuff with Heyman. And she became not an important part of that, but part of that. And she, you know, they were good foils for each other. So I was happy to work with her, and I was happy to see her get more opportunities. And I certainly got more opportunities from it as well.
And Matt, is there anything you can tell us about like the differences in the work environment at WWE while you were there? I want to say, is it J.R. Donlin who is leading, was it the Advanced Media Group? And eventually there was consolidation and Kevin Dunn took over that. And I don't know if at towards the end of your time, were you there for a little bit of Lee Fitting time?
Yes.
Any changes there?
I went through three regimes, maybe technically. You mentioned J.R. Donlin. He was AMG. That's what it was called at the time. J.R. Donlin was the number one. Brian Pellegato was the number two. There was various, Craig Tell is probably a name you know, worked for .com, wrote some books there, you know, great person. A lot of people were there. The pandemic changed things. People got furloughed. I remember that call to this day where, you know, Vince from his office telling everybody, you're still with us, you're furloughed, you're gone, whatever. And people waiting for that email, and a lot of people went away. And a lot of people, big names there, got furloughed and then were like, you know what? I'm not doing this. I'm out of here. JR was a big proponent of the bump. I was a big proponent of digital. And I've said this on my show. I've said it, anybody asked. TV and digital at that time, they didn't like each other. I mean, that's just how it was.
And TV is Kevin Dunn.
TV was Kevin Dunn. Yeah, TV at the time was Kevin Dunn. And I understood both sides of it. You know, there were times where digital probably pushed the envelope. I was told, hey, we're going to do that. You know, like Pellegato told me, we're going to push the envelope. We're going to try and talk about stuff that we wouldn't normally talk about. I remember having an episode with Aleister Black, and we know what that character was, you know, at the time. And it was, hey, can we talk about Tommy End? Can we talk about his time in Europe? And it was, okay, cool. And we did that. And, you know, we picked our spots with that, and it got him over in a different way, I think. It explained him a little bit more. Tommy End and Aleister Black weren't all that different, look and the character and all that, but it allowed us to kind of tell a bigger story. And I liked being able to do...
What is that like getting approval for... Well, we're going to talk about something that's kind of outside of the WWE world, and like, what is that like to make sure that that's okay?
Very good question, because it depended on who we were talking about, where they landed in the storylines at the time, were they prominent, you know... I was surprised we were allowed to do what we did with Aleister Black. This was the full, you know, entrance, Code Orange, whatever it was. And we put some candles on the set, but we got to talk to Tommy. And that was okay. Like, we knew all that ahead of time. I would never push that envelope unless I knew it was okay. Because I would, after probably a couple months, I kind of took it upon myself and I was asked, hey, the questions we write for the show, I was like, I'll do it. I like doing that stuff. I like being able to kind of research a little bit. And believe me, I lived on Cage Match trying to find anniversaries and matches and stuff to talk about and things like that. And hey, we can go get this footage. That stuff would all then get parsed through by the producers and the showrunners and all that, which I love. I love doing that. Sunday nights for me were like, okay, let's dive into who we have on this week. And some people, there wasn't a lot. And some people I also knew we kind of had to, you know, paint within the lines. You have to, you know, you have to stick with the character. But I remember when like John Morrison came back, and that was a big fight because we had like this unspoken rivalry with WWE backstage because we were on it, you know, the similar times. And sometimes, you know, Satin would get fed news and then we wouldn't get it, or we would get fed something and then they wouldn't get it, or we would get a guest. And he broke like Cross and Morrison signing, but we got Cross on the bump. And then we started talking about Lucha Underground and Five Star Wrestling, and that was allowed. And it was case by case. So I always did that stuff ahead of time. And if I was told, hey, not a good idea, I go, okay, no problem. And if there was little things I could work in, I know that it connected with a certain level of the audience, but I also knew the talent appreciated that as well, when you could kind of tell more of their story, and they're not going to get those chances on Raw and SmackDown.
When it came to kind of like butting heads with the TV side, were there some positives in the sense that you guys could maybe sometimes be on your own island, or was there still that connection that you kind of, it seems like it was always like a balancing act that you have to kind of figure out and have that sense of knowing where the line is. But at the same time, they're not watching you like a hawk, maybe.
That's the key. And I think we took advantage of that a little bit. I always knew at any time somebody big could be watching. If Vince happened to see the show in the elevator or something like that, and you know he's watching the linear feed because he was the only one watching the linear feed of the network, you never knew what he saw. And I had heard stories, oh, you know, the Bump pay-per-view show's on in Gorilla. Vince happened to be watching it. Cool, what did he think? And I had heard times like he was a fan of the show, and I was like, all right, cool. Never got mentioned on television. I think, you know, maybe four or five times. So that was frustrating to me because I was like, we're an entity. You're paying four to five of us to be on every week. You're flying talent into Stanford. Wasn't promoted. Guests weren't promoted. You know, the show would get a little thing on the ticker on the bottom line, maybe once a month. That would go away for months at a time. So that was frustrating. But at the same time, it's, yeah, I could probably get away with saying some more stuff. I was never going to push it that I was going to get in trouble. And I personally never did get in trouble. I think I knew enough from being a fan, from being in the industry a little bit before WWE, and just to understanding of you don't want to piss off the wrong people. And I was always cognizant of that. And we had some people on the show that said some dumb stuff. And I had to go like, hey, we've been on for 3 months. We are a blip in the history of this company. We could all get wiped away because the Bump should not be a something that TV has to worry about. So there was that kind of give and take of, I knew we could get away with more, but I was always bummed through the entire 5-year run that we did not get more love on television. Never made sense to me.
And since you left, you've talked a little about this notion that WWE put forward with staff and employees that, you know, this is a family. And you talked about the, you know, the big meeting that they had, I believe, with Dwayne Johnson at the headquarters. And then, you know, shortly after you were laid off. I mean, do you think that that's this notion of family? Is that something that's internalized with a lot of people? Is that something you believed in at the time?
I never believed that. And people of Kauf took the headline of that and were like, you're dumb for thinking it was a family. I was like, I knew it wasn't a family. I've been in businesses for years. I've had family that have worked for big sports companies and I've also been laid off or things like that. It's a job. It's a corporation. It's a major business. It was an even bigger business when Endeavor took over and they fired all kinds of people. And, you know, when they did the firings last November and December, I had friends that got let go. I had people that I expected to get let go, got let go, and ones that didn't. And you knew it was going to happen. I was certainly blindsided because I had worked the night before. I did the NXT kickoff show, and 12 hours later, I got an email saying, you have an HR call. And that was it. And I didn't. Michael Cole was my boss for my last 2 years there. No mention of him. I got on that HR call, and they said, just so you know, this isn't performance-based. That's why your superior, Michael Cole's not here. This is some fancy name for cost-cutting measure, and that was it. But I never took it as a family, and I understood when cuts happened. I didn't always agree with them, but that's the nature of the business. So, no, it was a job. It was a job I loved, and it was a job I was happy to get. It was a dream job. I got paid to talk about wrestling. I had zero complaints in the world, whether creative was god-awful or great. What did I have to complain about talking about wrestling? So the family notion was ridiculous, and you know, Dwayne saying that a couple weeks before I got laid off and the fact that he showed up an hour and a half late and made all those people wait on that day, like, and just to shake some hands. He was so late for that. So we were waiting all day, and that actually happened to be my birthday that he showed up.
Oh, my gosh.
He ruined my dinner. Here's your headline. He ruined my dinner, my birthday dinner. I couldn't go to Foxwoods and go eat at Hell's Kitchen. So thanks, Dwayne, for that. But no, like, he showed up late, and he made a special entrance through the crowd so he could shake everybody's hand, and he shook my hand, and like, he shook my hand as if a president would. Like, it didn't register with him. And I said that to people. I was like, it's like the president. He just walks through and he's shaking hands and kissing babies. And it's just the appearance. And it was rah, rah, I'm on the board now. And it's great to be back within my WWE, all the stuff he normally says. And some people were like, yeah, I'm in the background of the picture with Nick and Triple H and Dwayne. Whatever. I mean, I know that's what it is. But some people, yes, they did consider it their family.
Is it a weird adjustment for you that, I mean, you just mentioned the fact of like seeing a headline that when you state something, it is going to be taken onto different sites. You go to a Forbidden Door show and that's a news story. Is that weird for you now that you're in the sense where, you know, what you say on your show, people are focused on because there's always this deep curiosity about what goes on in this company?
It's weird that I'm getting more headlines now than when I worked there.
Yeah.
And that I get far more engagement if I'm doing a Busted Open show, just because of that's how it was. There was a time like Bump just stopped getting clipped out. Like they stopped posting about it on the main account, and that was their call. And they didn't think the manpower was worth it. And the biggest headline I made in WWE was my first month. And I was on top of Reddit when they did the Fiend and Seth match, and I was doing watch along, which was like, I don't know, my first thing outside of Bump. And it was my first month, and we're watching the show, and they do the no con or the ref stoppage. And I'm on there with X-Pac, and he goes, I don't know if they're going to bring me back, but you can't do a DQ in the hall in a Hell in a Cell match. And I was like, I just used wrestling and Vince logic, which wasn't correct. I was like, I think they did a ref stoppage and they just gave Seth the match. It was horrible booking. I mean, they're pelting Vic and Mason, all those guys coming off of commentary as they left, because it's a great show and then a horrible main event. And I'm on top of Reddit the next day, like, look at this new guy. He's such a shill. And I was like, I literally just tried to use Vince logic and I was correct. It still was god awful booking.
That clip was the best thing that came out of that show. I think Denise Salcedo was there.
Yes, she was with Sean. Yeah, yes. And so we were just like, and I was never, you know, sometimes I knew stuff, but at that point, I'm there a month. I was like, I was still working for Bleacher Report on the weekends. I flew in from Vegas, went right to Sacramento. I was my first show to be at, and I was not like in a suit, and I was kind of told like you're supposed to dress up, and I'm like, I'm in bump clothes. I'm in this. So I kind of just stayed in the watch-along room the whole time, and I was on for 85% of the show. It was cool to interact with people, but that happened, and I'm just going like, And we on the 2-3 days later on the bump, we get a quote from Rod Zapata explaining the finish. Like that was kind of like that weird gray area of what the bump was. It was like, okay, we'll get a kayfabe answer to why that finish sucked. But back to your question, like, I like that I'm getting recognized just for the show thing. I like to talk about that stuff. I have no interest of going out there and burying people. I'll be very honest about things. If I think things sucked, it sucked. It's weird that I know that Kevin Dunn liked me. It's weird that I know Vince was cool with me and was all right putting me on those shows. It's weird to have those people that had support when I never talked to either of them one time in 5 years. I didn't. I think I met Kevin Dunn for 8 seconds once when a regime change happened, when JR got let go and they brought in Jamie and Steve Braban and those people. Like, he gave them a tour. I happened to be one of the 6 people that was still kind of going into the building during COVID once they let us back in. And I was wearing like a Bret Hart sweatshirt and sweatpants. And like, there's Kevin Dunn with the new people. And I'm like, hi, I'm Matt. But that's it. That's when I met Kevin, and I never spoke to Vince once.
Tell us a bit about that period, especially when the pandemic is beginning. And I know that you guys nearly got Anthony Fauci on the show, but just in general, like, as people will recall, like, you are turning on, and obviously there are no fans there. We know why this is, but we are not going to put a spotlight on COVID when we are. But tell me about like navigating
extenuating circumstances. Yes.
Yeah. Like, we had our coded language for it, and you got like, this is a massive worldwide event, and how are you guys handling that on a week-to-week basis? And for those that didn't hear your clip as well, how close this came with Anthony Fauci nearly being on the bump.
So when COVID started, 4 days before COVID, I did watch along in Philly for Elimination Chamber, and the Rudy Gobert stuff happens 4 days after that. So that's the last pay-per-view, I think, before Mania. Maybe there was a Saudi show in between or whatever, but no, that was it. I guess that was it. And I remember going to that show, and it was a ghost town. Like, they brought in who they needed. Taker did that special thing with AJ to set up the Boneyard match. Like, I think AJ was going against Alistair, but that was it. Like, I was like, what's going on? This is weird. And we had heard about it. And then the Gobert thing happens. And I remember being in the office, cause I had a cubicle. Like, I was an employee. I had a spot where I would go to the office a couple days a week. It was in the digital building. And there were people going, Vince won't, well, Mania's going to happen. Like, Vince won't let that. It's going to happen. And I'm going like, I don't know if he's going to have control of this one. Like, it might be out of his hands. Because Bump was supposed to do like 5 shows in Tampa, 2 on the day of, very college. And we were excited. We were going on the road. And all of a sudden, it's like, people are getting sick. And there was an episode where like a couple of guests got sick. And it was right before COVID. And they probably had COVID. And we didn't know. We had to like scramble to fix the show. And all of a sudden it was like, okay, we're going home. Like, but what are we going to do? And I got like, I was there a couple extra days. before, you know, safely, I guess, still, maybe not safely. And I was like, what do you need? Like, what do we get? Do we need content? What can I do? And I did probably three or four best ofs, which is how I got that gig. It's just because I was there and I did best of Becky and best of Charlotte. And I did a top 10 Mania match, which were all stuff that I would just walk in and talk about every time, the other time I did it. But they're like, hey, can you do like a top 10 Mania list? And I was like, sure. And I wrote it out and they were like, okay, well, we need a couple of the, you know, we need a women's match or we need, you know, they structure those top 10s in a certain way. And I shot a bunch of them. And then I was told, okay, go be safe. And I think I left on March 25th or late in March. And they used some of that stuff to put on Fox. I remember Jacob Ullman reaching out to me and being like, hey, congrats, you're going to be on FS1 tonight. And I was like, cool. And that's whatever, you know, ESPN used Manias. And they were showing Manias during the – and it was very much of, well, what can we do? And I don't want this to sound like I'm being harsh or I'm being I'm not being sensitive. I worked more in COVID than I worked at any time. I was asked to do so much. I got put in a position where it's like, whatever you can do. So we had Dream Match Mania, and I did that thing with Big E and Kofi that kind of got me out there. And all of a sudden it was right before I left, we shot extra bumps. We were doing two bumps a week just to give content after, just to put it out into the world. And I got the sense of like, okay, nothing is planned. Like, we're going to have to figure this out. And I'm shooting NXT Injury Report, you know, from my house and setting up my own camera and my own lighting. And okay, you got to upload this to here when it's, I got sent home or sent with a bunch of different equipment. And that was it. And we're doing bumps from, you know, everybody's at their home studio that everything got set up for. And that's how Bump became a pay-per-view show on the days of. It was just, hey, this will work. And they did unreal numbers. Like, I remember there was like one with Braun right after he beat Goldberg at Mania, and it did like 1 million views. And we're like, oh, there's something here. And that replaced the WWE Now that they did that live kind of show with Rome or Kathy or Kayla. And then it was just very much like, let's try stuff out. And there's Dream Match Mania. And there was like those debate shows we did. And RJ came on and Denise came on. And it was just, what can we make? And then Watch Along comes back and it just becomes Zoom Watch Along from home. And, you know, we copied that. What's her name? Katie. She was on Fox. Katie
Nolan.
Katie Nolan. She did that Zoom, and they're like, well, "Let's do that." And it farmed out to wrestlers getting Arquette. I get Arquette, and Arquette gets RJ, and there's the Bellas, and there's Rick. We're just trying stuff, and it worked in a way. It worked. You know, I always appreciated whether it was safe or not, or the governor of Florida at the time was breaking rules and getting his own personal shows to get to watch to the PC. I appreciated every member of the staff and the wrestlers and the PC wrestlers that had to sit in the crowd. Like, I don't know how safe that was. It probably wasn't. But you know what? It kept me employed. And I super appreciated that. And no, nobody wants to go back and watch that stuff. But the efforts that were put in by people that basically had to start living in Florida should be applauded. Because a lot of people were forced probably into stuff that was not so safe. And, you know, you made it work. We had to say all those things, the code, unprecedented times. And, you know, with what's going on in the world right now. Finally, we started saying like pandemic. But it, like, I don't think KD liked that stuff. He didn't like masks, I'll tell you that.
Is there a, like a detox you go through of like getting out like the WWE verbiage? Is there a kind of a de-escalation of that for you that you come out
is
of?
There, where there it just re-education becomes classes?
It's funny you say that because when Vince was gone, like when was it 2 years? I guess you guys posted just about this yesterday. Like Vince is gone 2 years ago.
Yeah.
For the first resignation.
Yes.
I knew I could start saying wrestling, or at least just try it. I just was like, I'm going to say wrestling. I'm going to say pro wrestling. And I think a couple months it was like, there was like a note. And it was like, we're still sports entertainment. Let's not forget that. And it wasn't like a hard, it was just like, all right, I definitely was like, all right, I can probably say a little bit more now. I said superstars on my show today. And I was like, well, I guess they are. I mean, PLE stuck in my head. And I tried to be like, can I make PLE a thing? Well, it's a premium live event. We don't call them PPVs. And I was like, yeah, but PLE sounds good. It's quicker. It's like, and that's what they are. But I think I always kind of try to, I said superstars here and there. I mean, once Vince was gone the second time, that stuff kind of was like, nobody was like, you didn't say it right. Or, you know, you didn't say that. There were weird things like that, though. Like when Roman's reign, and they were talking about the numbers, I was told, don't talk about the other ones with numbers. It's like, Gunther had his big reign, and Bianca had, don't bring up the numbers, only Roman's numbers. And I was like, "What? Why? Like, they're all great numbers. They're all." And that, now that was a Vince thing. And like when Vince came back, I knew when Vince came back, when Brock and Omos became a thing, like nobody knew, like it wasn't a, but I was like, oh, he's back. Like he's doing stuff.
Did you have a sense of when? So Vince resigns in July 2022. He then comes back at the very beginning of 2023. Did you have a sense that he was getting more involved in creative or in
yes,
anything in the company?
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't think he totally went away, honestly, the first time around. I remember because SummerSlam was like, what, a week after that? 2 weeks after?
Yes, very soon.
I was at that show. Mm-hmm. I was there. It was a different world. It was a different atmosphere. Nobody was walking on eggshells. And I'm not saying it was like that all the time, but it just felt looser. And Stephanie's there. And you could see her face. And, you know, Hunter's running the show. And it just felt like everybody was there to have a good time. It didn't feel like there was that same kind of pressure. And there wasn't, you know, they stuck to the game plan that night. It wasn't getting rewritten or changed or things like that. And I remember being out there. And I didn't know about damage control. And I was just out there for the first match and watching, you know, from our area in the crowd. And I went, okay, things are different now, you know, and it stayed that way. And I know people were like, well, that was what the creative was. And I was like, you're not, you know, Dakota came on the bump 3 days later and was like, I got a call a week ago. Like, I just got told. So Hunter had stuff that he wanted to do. I think he fell in line for a bit. I think Vince still had people's ears. I still think Vince had backers when he retired. And that certainly did continue and everything that came of that. And, but when he was gone, you knew it. But I, you know, the Brock Omos match is the most like, that's Vince. And I don't think it was even a bad idea, but it was the most like, that's clearly Vince. Like, that's not something that Paul was going to put on the card. And for better, for worse, it was on there, but you could see it. And I also saw in a weird way, because when I did Raw Talk and SmackDown Lowdown, I would get the full scripts of the show. I had every bit of Raw Talk, Raw and SmackDown, because we were trying to prepare for what we're going to talk about and things like that. And I could see, like, here's what Cole's going to say. And all of a sudden, there was a uptick in nicknames. Big Bronson Reed and the badass. And I was like, oh, that's Vince stuff. You know, the whatever Pete, the mangy mutt Pete Dunne, like all of a sudden that stuff getting worked back in. I was like, okay, Vince is getting, he's clearly putting eyes on this and sending notes. I don't think he was
writing
the scripts.
Do you remember the timing of that? Is that after he forces his way back in, or is that?
He's back. He's back. Yes. So it's leading into Mania, and I think probably around that area. But I remember and I had heard, like, he's not writing the shows, but he's getting a pass through. Like, it's passing through him once they're done. And I will tell you this, when Paul had full control, whether it be right after that SummerSlam time or then when Vince was six scripts went down to two or three, and there were never massive changes. Under Vince, matches would go away, segment, full stuff, totally change. And I don't know if you're a talent how you handle that, because I got the full script. They're getting like a piece. They're getting what you're doing tonight, and it's going from, well, we rehearsed this match to now it's an in-ring, or now it's a backstage. That's no way to work. And I don't know what the point of that stuff was, because you're writing that show 3 or 4 days prior and you're going through, you know, all those talks of those meetings going on. I was never in them, thank God. But I had heard those stories of, well, Raw was written on Friday and it changed by Monday. It's like, what the hell were you doing on Friday? Why are you staying up till hours? That stuff never made sense. And I think now people have an idea what they're going to do, whether it's good or bad. At least they know. And that's going to put on better performances.
Did you sense from colleagues of yours, just an overall vibe in the company that, especially the first time around that Vince is leaving, that there was a mindset of Vince leaving was going to have a negative impact on the product? Or was there enough of a kind of groundswell that people were ready for a fresh take on from the top down of how this is to be run? Was there a divide there on Vince leaving and whether it was going to be good for the product, good for morale, or the opposite?
I think people were happy. I think people were definitely happy. I was happy because there's times in, and I know the Thunderdome was tough, but, you know, There's some awful creative there. That was the toughest part of the job. If the show sucked and me having to sell that stuff, I mean, that was tough. And look, the pandemic, I don't even want to count because every stuff was trying. But like, I saw it the other day. I was like, remember when they used to do 2 out of 3 falls matches because Vince didn't like the commercial break? Like, right. Just oh, random stuff, just throwing it against the wall. Or, hey, let's do Woods and Bobby Lashley in Hell in a Cell. Why? Are we trying to win? I those ratings and stuff like that, rating stunts. And I have to say, it doesn't feel like they worry about that stuff as much anymore. They might load up NXT to beat AEW once in a while, which is, that's their own, you know, PR type of thing to do. But, you know, Vince would just throw that stuff out there. And, I was excited when he was gone because a lot of stuff was bad. And I heard enough stories of, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, and we'll see. You know, there's a lot of that. It was just, you didn't need to be left in the dark as much. And I had heard, and I guess this is out there, and I'm sure you guys have talked about it in the past, when that company went public, Vince's mindset completely changed. I had been told that from very high up people that had worked there for a long time. That's when he felt like, I have to control things. The company's public. There are shareholders that need to be taken care of. I have to micromanage everything. And people said it wasn't like that before that. You know, yeah.
And that's October 99, they go public.
Right. That's when it was like, nope, I gotta take full reins of this. So I do think there's something to the fact that that timeline, especially, you know, like when Austin, they don't mention the fact that he's retiring, right? He just has the match with Rock and they don't call it retirement. And I think he talked about that. It's, you know, they didn't want to mess with the stock price. And that leads into the invasion and all that stuff. And it kind of makes sense where it's like, oh, that all sucked because Vince didn't want to hear from anybody else. WCW is below us. I mean, he's going to take it. Gone were the days of Pat and Bruce sitting at the pool with Vince. Like, of all the people, and there's a lot of smart people on that writing staff, it still came down to Vince. You were writing for Vince. That's not the case anymore. And I think now stuff doesn't get overlooked. I think I saw it my last year or so there. If something's on the show, it's on the show for a reason. You didn't have people just sitting around and catering. You didn't have a lot of random matches. It feels like everything is at least going somewhere. Whether it's going to work or not, they stuck to it. You know, if Natty and Tegan Nox are going to be a tag team, I don't know if it's going to get over, but we're going to stick with it for a month at least. That wasn't Vince, and that stuff drove people nuts.
And I think that you even go further down the line about this company going public, and I think this kind of gets lost along the way, is that if this is not a public company, the Wall Street Journal is not looking into this story. Like, this was, at its core, it's a case about sexual misconduct and NDAs, but it was the misappropriation of funds that allowed a Wall Street Journal to it fall under their beat. And if this is not a public company, there's a very good chance Vince McMahon is in his position and he's fighting this suit from within and doesn't have shareholders to answer to.
I almost compared it to Daniel Snyder when he wouldn't change the name of the Redskins. And then all of a sudden, you know, FedEx is going to pull out or whatever, you know, now the money's going away. And I remember that, I guess was it January, Brandon? Is that when this came out? The suit?
The suit, before, yeah, January 25th. Yep.
Okay. So that was a SmackDown night because I remember it's like, it was maybe an hour before SmackDown or whatever. And,
he resigns during SmackDown.
During SmackDown. It was during an LWO match. It was like, it was
the day before, I think.
Okay. So day before, but I remember it was like 8:20. We got the note and we're like, I remember sitting there Friday night. I would get to the studio around 7 o'clock. SmackDown goes 8, you know, we're going to watch a show together and what we're going to do. And I'm sitting in the kitchen. We're all just talking about it. And, I said, and people were mad. Like, people were mad. Like, that's gross. I can't believe I work for that guy. And I think people, you know, not that they knew, but I don't think anybody was like, Vince is a great guy and what a stand-up human being. Like, you knew who you were working for, but for it to come out in such detail, and then it's like, okay, so this guy's still here? Like, what? And I said, if there's any threat of sponsors, he's gone. No one will let that happen. And what was it, Snickers or whatever? Slim Jim. There you go. They were like, nah. And I was like, that's it. And it was like, when are they going to drop this? And I think, like, Carlito or LWO were in the ring and like we got the email and I think it came out as a press release at the same time. It was like, he's done, and it came from Nick, and I was like, okay, that's it. Like, I knew that was it, and here we are, you know, today. And it never felt like, when Endeavor took over and there was a town hall meeting and Mark Shapiro was there. And Mark Shapiro, right before, I could say this now, I don't give a crap because I was, you know, he said he's about to walk out. And in the new building, I guess you guys have maybe seen some of the, there's like a Titantron in the main area of the new building. It looks like the old Raw set. There's a big Tron and there's an entrance. Like there's a gorilla behind there. Legit. There's an actual gorilla there for whatever, because they were filming stuff because Vince wanted a gorilla there. So there's this big, here's the Endeavor announcement, and Shapiro's there and Ari Emanuel's there and Vince and Nick's there up front and Hunter's there and, you know, whatever the, maybe Brad Blum was there up front. And Shapiro comes out and he's like, I've just been told about the wrestling trades and I guess some of the things leak in there and stuff had always gotten out from these meetings. And he's like, you know, I'm willing to be open. It was a town hall. It was, you know, he's like, well, you've done these at ESPN before. So, you know, I'm willing to be open there, but if anything gets out, I won't be doing that anymore. And for whatever reason, nothing got out from that meeting other than Vince's appearance, which was Shapiro's out first. Nick does this big intro for Vince. Vince comes out and he's asking for applause. Like he's like, come on, I'm Vince McMahon. Like, I was like, you're not on TV right now, dude. Like we all work for, and he's asking for it. And he asks for more, and he gets on the mic. And I was like, am I watching Raw from 20 years ago in front of my face? Right? Like it was so weird. And it's this rambling speech. And, you know, he came out with a cane, which I was kind of surprised, like that he wanted to be, you know, that was when you saw him get in the ring in those Thunderdome things, you never saw him get in the ring. And that was said, do not shoot Vince getting into the ring because you don't want to show Vince weak. You know, that kind of, I was like, all right, whatever. He's the boss. But he then introduces his boss, Ari Emanuel, and Ari is kind of like taken aback. And I think both him and Shapiro were like, I didn't know this thing was getting shot. And that was Vince's call, like 3-camera shoot. I was like, no, it's a town hall. They didn't have cameras. Like people sat at tables at ESPN and maybe they filmed it for legal purposes on one camera, like in the background. But like Vince had a full production team and this is how it has to be done. And Ari was very, you know, to the point, golf shirt and slacks. Everybody else was in suits. And it's like, you know, I'm glad to be here. Just kind of learning things. And he told the story of how him and his partners met Vince 20 something years ago and wanted to represent him and the company. And here they were. And I'm just going like, this guy's going to take Vince out. Like it's going to happen. And it did. Like it always felt like a matter of time. And then he gave them reasons and it made it much easier.
The last topic here I want to bring up, you've been very generous with your time and this has been great. Obviously, near and dear to myself and Brandon are these press conferences after the premium live events.
I figured we would get there. Yes.
My question to you is, as somebody that understands like what WWE wanted out of projects like The Bump and that balance, what do these press conferences serve from the company side of things? And do you think they are happy with what this post show that they now branded is, how effective it is for them?
I think the last one they did has been the best. That stuff with Drew and all that was a home run. That guy needs to get prepped better sometimes. I'll tell you that right now. We're just talking about the Vince stuff, right? So he has to go do the Rumble press conference. What is it? 2 months before this one right here? Probably, I think. Yeah, before the Hollywood. The Bump started doing post-show reactions to pay-per-views. We would tape them, you know, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning after they were over. So we would watch these just in case anything we had to talk about was there. So I'm watching on my phone and he gets asked about the lawsuit. And he says what he says about I didn't read it. And it was a great week for the company. And I just went, oh, my God. Like, how could you possibly how is PR not talking to him beforehand? I don't think he likes doing this stuff. I think he likes to go, hey, we did this and that. I think he loves wrestling. I think Paul has been in a wrestling bubble since he was in WCW, since Killer Kowalski trained him. I think he likes to book wrestling. I think he likes to talk about wrestling. I don't think he likes being the face. I think they've made him that. I think they want him to be Dana White, and he's accepted that, and why wouldn't you? You know, Vince is gone. It's Paul's spot. But I remember him talking, and I went, oh, Why are you trotting him out there? If he's not going to be prepared for stuff that you know is coming, what's the point? And I remember when they started these, and I told the story of, oh, we're doing a press conference at Survivor Series. Maybe they had done like one prior, and I was at that Survivor Series because we did the one and only bump on the road from there. And I said, hey, can I just go there as like a representative of the bump? Like, can I be state media and raise my hand? Because I knew who was going in those places. There are respectable people like you guys, and then there's content creators who are like, are you going to go in the Hall of Fame someday? And I'm like, great, what a useless question that was. So they're like, yeah, that'd be great. And I knew I was playing along. That's how I took it. And they sent me to Legentil. And I was like, what do you need? I'm the journalist from the company. What do you need? You know, there's writers that cover their own teams. You know, every team in any pro sport has a writing staff or has people that cover it. That's what I was. I was like, okay, I'm going to go ask some kayfabe questions, some not. And they knew, well, he's reliable. He's not going to say anything we're worried about. He's going to play. And that's what I did. Cause I worked there.
Were they giving you questions? Were they giving you questions
to ask you? I had enough trust that I was like, am I good to? Yeah, I'm good. Like, I'm going to ask a good question. I did have kind of that leeway. I earned that thing, which I always appreciated that they trusted me to. He's not going to say anything dumb. So I remember I talked to Heyman and Sammy, and, you know, there's a great picture of me and Heyman, and Heyman's looking down on me. And I was like, that's exactly what they want. And then I went to the Rumble one, and, you know, this is the one where people are, you know, have reached out and are not happy about me calling them out. And I don't need to give them press on your show because they don't deserve it. But I would hear just like promoting their website. Like, you guys go to a press conference or any sports conference. Hi, I'm so-and-so from this paper or this publication. That's it. And you ask a question, not promoting your stuff or making jokes. Or if the talent does that, okay, fine. Like, clapping? What are we clapping for? Like, that's, you don't clap in a press box. If you want to play along with the show, okay, your credibility goes right out the window to me. And they want that. They don't want those press conferences to be controversial at all. They want you to talk up the show and give them softballs. Nobody gets told that. I will tell you that. Nobody who walks in there gets told that. You guys know that. It's just, if you get the mic, you get the mic.
And Brandon's been to more than me, but like, never have we been told this is off limits or anything like that.
There's never any ground rules. Yeah. There's nothing that we were ever told not to ask about, at least us, you know.
And the opposite, like, especially for Brandon, like, Brandon always gets a question in, and it's not a surprise, like, what avenue he is coming at. Like, I will always give them credit for the fact, like, they could very easily avoid going to a Brandon, and they do. And I guess that's just the question is, like, there's obviously at least some degree of wanting, like, at least somebody in there that's going to ask a serious question, even though it can kind of blow up, as we saw at the Rumble. Like, that was not a good moment for Paul Levesque.
No, but if you're going to allow that, and I agree, they should do that. Prep them. Don't put him in that. Don't put a talent in that spot. You know, Cena got that thing, and I don't think I told you, it was a good question. He just dances around Vince. Like, you couldn't, John Cena didn't have a prepared answer to talk about Vince. Something canned. I can't, Triple H at least said, hey, it's legal, I can't talk about it. You know what? At least it's something. At least it's acknowledging this could be troublesome. It's the same thing as a no comment, but at least that there's that much substance to it. Look, you guys know who will go in those rooms. They're content creators. They're trying to make stuff. You know, they're happy to say, here's my interview at the press conference with Damian Priest. Or like, Priest walking in and going, all rise. Like, no, they're press. And then people did. It's like, they're not part of the show. You're not getting paid to do that. That's not how that works. If they're told to do that, that's fine. I think the format is better now. Jackie's a pro. I loved working with her. She's great in that role. They made that look really good. I think it's put Wade in a great spot. You know, calling out the softballs.
Yes.
Did I influence that? I don't know. I don't know. I have heard through the grapevine. I've mentioned on my show. I'll say it here. We've been turned down for guests on the Wrestling Met. Don't know. I wasn't told. Somebody who works for me on my show was just told, we'll politely pass. I was like, okay, that's fine. So I know, and I've heard, people have heard what I've said and watched what I've said, and oh, well, I'm not trying to get a job back there. But people have said way worse.
I will say on the press conference front, the person that continually has impressed me in that role is Shawn Michaels. I think he's been very good in that similar role on these NXT calls. And he was a contrast because days after the Paul Levesque disaster at the Rumble, like he was asked some pretty intense questions. And I thought he, you know, for a representative of the company that can always just listen, that's above my pay grade. Like he does have that out. He comes across a lot more genuine and, you know, as transparent as someone is going to be in that role.
I have had nothing but good experiences with Shawn. Like, and everybody knows of what he was, and he's talked about that. He is so willing to play along with everything, you know, doing a TikTok with Jordan and Sexy Red and all, like, they kind of make him to be like the old dad of NXT. And anytime he did stuff for the bump and was like, I think he's very appreciative of the role and that he lasted. You know, Hunter has his heart issue. Shawn gets NXT and followed what they wanted. And he's continued to do that. I remember before I worked there, during that, when Paul used to do those NXT media calls, man, he got hit with some, you know, he would evade the Dream stuff, or he would talk and he would say some dumb stuff that it's like, dude, you're digging your own grave here for no reason. I truly don't believe he liked doing that. I think Shawn is like, hey, this is what the role is. I'll take it on. I think Shawn, much like Hunter, has a wrestling brain. You hear all the click stories, and as much as they might have been a pain in the butt to people, they drove in the cars and talked wrestling. I still think that's what Shawn does, and I still think that's what he teaches. But he's pretty good at it, and I think he's appreciative of the role, and I think he embraces it. And you know, I remember I was in Miami for the Super Bowl a few years back. I told the story recently on my show, and we were trying to get Gronk. That was just what I was told from entertainment relations, trying to get Gronk to be part of Mania. And then he was. He co-hosted at the PC, or hosted. So we go to his party, and we had gone to something. You know, we were following him around, and Mojo was there, and Hunter and Steph go there, and they spend $10,000 on a table, you know, a bottle service. Hunter doesn't drink, and I don't think Stephanie was going to drink in public or whatever. And, you know, just to, you know, pump the tires of Gronkowski. They go to the party, and, you know, I'm with a producer, and we had interviewed Steph and Gronk and Triple H and all these people. And Belichick walks in, and I happen to be the only one that caught it, and it was like all over Bleacher Report and stuff like that. And we get told, come in. Nikki Samponio, who used to run social, works with John Cena now. It's like, come in. Like, we're not going to shoot anything necessarily. And they get that picture with Gronk and his girlfriend and Mojo and Belichick and Triple H. It's this weird, like, I don't know, fever dream of a picture. And it's at Gronk's party. And they buy the drink service for $10,000. And they're there for 15 minutes and they're done. Like, Paul could not wait to get out of there. It was not his scene at all. And he was on a little bit of a raised platform. And people are like, oh, Triple H. And there it is. I'm like off to the side of this, and Belichick walks. It was so like Bill Belichick in the 24/7 title is just, that's wrestling Mad Libs to me right there. Like that you couldn't, what? And it worked. And I got told after, like, oh, I think that went great. Like, I think we might have him. And then Gronk did it. And by the way, Gronk was awesome. I interviewed him. Everybody who worked with him said he was great. You know, he was willing to do stuff, 24/7 title, all he got it, and he fit perfectly. But that was one of those things that I'm like, okay. And I had worked there for 4 or 5 months at the time, and I got sent because I had done football. I was like, okay, this is what this is. And I was told, like, let's get Gronk. And I was like, all right, let's go get Gronk, and I'll do whatever I need to do to get out of the way. And that's, and I just watched Stephanie and Hunter. Like, I said hi to them for a second, and they were just like, when can we get out of here? But we have to stand here and be representative of the company. And then they were gone, and no one touched the bottle service. Oh, wait, no. Charlie Caruso did, because she was there at the party, and then she went and drank their stuff. And we're like, maybe not the best idea. See you later.
Well, there you go. Charlie Caruso. Now of Power Slap, which you can see her on, among other properties that she is attached with. But Matt, we want to very much thank you for jumping on with us, and do give our viewers out there a chance to plug your stuff that's going on with the Wrestling Matt. You're doing great content out there, and if you enjoyed these stories, plenty more here over at the Wrestling Matt.
TheWrestlingMatchShow.com. You could subscribe. We have memberships now starting at $2.99. You can watch SummerSlam with me next week. But it's reviewing the shows. I don't touch everything on the shows because some stuff I'm like, I don't really care about this. And sometimes I plan to talk about stories of my wrestling past in WWE. And sometimes shows like yesterday, for some reason, my mind got jogged about when I found out Punk was going to be on WWE Backstage. And I knew before a lot of people, and I just started telling that story for 40 minutes. So I like to go on tangents, and anything you miss, we got shorts and videos. You can follow our social at WrestlingMatt23. And weekdays, we are live 1 o'clock every single weekday. And I am enjoying talking all things wrestling. All things wrestling was always in my brain. Even when I worked there, I was always watching everything. And now I get to talk about it all the time. So thanks a lot, guys.
Well, thanks for coming on. I hope we can do this again sometime. And if you are at any upcoming pay-per-views, I'm sure it will be covered in the wrestling media, Matt Camp's wrestling itinerary of when he is backstage or attending a show.
I might not be in a press conference with WWE, but if I'm at anything else, yeah, you could say hi too. It's okay. I'm not trying to hide, but yeah, if you want to put me in a headline, just link back to the show, please. You guys are great with that. That's all I ask.
Thanks so much, Matt. This was great. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
All right, everyone. Matt Camp joining us. I feel we just scratched the surface there of like stories you can get there in WWE. So he was there for like some very, like when you look back at it, like this period of time, like from the pandemic to all the stuff with Vince McMahon to be in the midst of everything that's going on. And, you know, Matt has a pretty good head on his shoulders that I think figures, you know, understands kind of what the larger picture is at play. It's really interesting to get his perspective.
They apparently didn't sign him to an NDA.
That's true. That was true. No NDA for Matt Camp. Well, there you go, everybody. We're going to call it a show at this point. Brandon is going to be back, as always, Sunday with WrestleNomics Radio. So go check that out. 11 a.m. Eastern time. This coming Sunday, you will be live. Patreon.com/WrestleNomics. Yes. Tonight, after the presidential address, after Blood and Guts, I will be recapping the AEW portion, at least, with Andrew Thompson, who is in for Wei Ting tonight. So you can tune in tonight here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. And then we have all of our regular shows coming up in the next couple of days, including all of our G1 coverage that can be found at postwrestlingcafe.com on our Patreon. And that's going to wrap it up. Anything that's in the pipeline for you, Brandon, that you're working on?
A lot of Quora reports went out today. So those are all out there through SmackDown, Rampage, Collision, Raw. Those are all available right now on the Patreon.
All right. There you go. The answer to who's a draw always can be
who's a draw
at patreon.com.
Interpret for yourself. Yes.
Yes. Yes. But always remember the ad breaks. Okay. Always. Yes. Always put that caveat in there.
They're called out for sure. You'll notice them.
All right. That's going to wrap things up. Thanks to everybody. Thank you to Matt Camp for joining us, and we'll speak with you next week. Same time, same place, same channels.